The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. Sam, another busy week in both the ACL and J1, but over in the UK, a limited number of fans have been allowed back into selected stadiums in different parts of the country. So how has that gone over the weekend?
Yeah, I think generally quite well. As you said, it's only select grounds. It's in regions that are where the virus is not as prevalent, maybe. So, yeah, I think they were in Liverpool and Tottenham yesterday. So, generally, it's going okay. It's so easy in England with the stadiums that you can always spread 2,000 as it is at the moment out. So, I don't think there's been any problems with that. It's been usually quite good to hear the crowds back, unless you're at Millwall, as they're booing the Black Lives Matter knee. But other than that, it's gone quite well. And, yeah, it's great to have a bit of like real atmosphere back into the stadium.
Yes, indeed. Not like Millwall fans to cause a bit of controversy, is it? But anyway, that's for a different, many different podcasts to discuss than ours. Okay, so let's begin with our roundup of goings on in the ACL over in Qatar, and all three J1 clubs made it through to the round of 16. Yokohama F. Marinos joined already qualified Kobe in the knockout round by knocking out two-time champions Jeonbuk of South Korea with a 4-1 win last Tuesday, and FC Tokyo followed suit by edging past Perth 1-0 on Thursday in their final Group F game. Then the round of 16 began on Sunday, and unfortunately for FC Tokyo, the round of 16 was as far as they got for the third time they've been in the ACL, and they've made it this far and lost in the knockout round at the first time of asking. Beijing FC took FC Tokyo down, a 59th minute goal from Allen, or Alan, however you like to say it, was enough to take Beijing through to the quarterfinals. And they are joined by the other victor from Sunday, Ulsan, who beat Melbourne Victory 3-0. But better news for the J-League on Monday night, with Kobe winning 2-0 over Shanghai SIPG. Andres Iniesta scoring just past the half hour, and Daigo Nishi 5 minutes into the second half. Now, Sam, we are recording almost right after that game. I have not seen a kick of it, and you've watched the entire thing, and we're recording our podcast in between the two games, with the Yokohama F. Marinos and Suwon kicking off at 11 p.m. Japan time. So obviously the listeners will know the result of that game by the time they listen to the podcast, but it's yet to be played as we record. So we can't talk about that game, but we can talk about Tokyo losing and Kobe then winning on Monday night.
Yeah, well, I'll start with the positive, shall I? Kobe, I thought, got back to where they were maybe in the Guangzhou game. They played very well. They controlled possession nicely. Shanghai came into the game without Hulk. He'd had a bit of a barney with his manager in the Yokohama game, so he hasn't made the last few squads. And Aaron Moy, their Australian central midfielder, he was only fit enough for the bench. So those are two massive losses for Shanghai. But really, they didn't get going bar an incident at the start of the game, maybe 2 minutes in, where they had the ball in the net through a header, but it was judged to have fouled Michael, which was a very soft decision. But after that, Kobe really took control of the game. They, took the lead through Iniesta. It was poor goalkeeping from the Shanghai keeper, but, another goal that the AFC will be delighted about. And then, they just really controlled the game from then on. They played Daigo Nishi, which is kind of the talk of the game. He starts off as technically a right winger if you put the formation out, but he has this kind of free role where he just goes wherever he wants, which you wouldn't necessarily expect that of Daigo Nishi, but it's worked here. He got his goal. Furuhashi got down the left. It's a lovely cross in, and then Nishi gets into the centre, and it's quite a difficult one to control. It's maybe chest height, the ball, and he gets his leg up and manages to divert it in. So yeah, terrific goal from him. And then you'd expect a Shanghai fight back. Iniesta was subbed off, so you thought, okay, is this their opening? They'd brought Moy on at half time, but really Shanghai didn't offer a lot at all. It was a very strange performance from them, very poor performance, and Kobe very worthy of their place in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, fantastic. Terrific result for Vissel. And so what of Tokyo then? Obviously a frustrating result for me personally as a Tokyo supporter and all FC Tokyo fans. As I said, the third time we've made it this far in the competition, but it seems a mountain too big to climb for the club at this stage.
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed with the performance, really. I mean, Beijing had come in with a lot of confidence. They were unbeaten in their group, but I mean, they played well, Beijing, but I don't think they ever had to get out of second or third gear in this game. Tokyo had a few chances early on. They went close with the Andro a couple of times, but really, in a tight and tense game, it was just Beijing had a little bit more quality, I thought. Renato Augusto caused a lot of problems for Ogawa down the Beijing right. He kind of held the line on the touchline, and Ogawa got really exposed. No one really helped him out. They had a warning just before Alan's goal when he fired over from the same source of Renato Augusto. So, yeah, it wasn't a surprise a couple of minutes later when Alan did actually finish one of those chances. And then after that, a bit like Shanghai today, and there wasn't much of a response from Tokyo. In fact, Hasegawa took off everyone that looked like they might have scored a goal. Leandro went off, Nagai went off. You brought on younger players, Connor came on, and yeah, I mean, really, the team that ended the game never looked like scoring. It was pretty comfortable for Beijing, unfortunately. And yeah, they going through, and they're going to be a difficult team for anyone to play against in this quarterfinal.
Yes, indeed. All right, so yeah, we know three of the four quarterfinalists from the East region as we record this podcast on Monday night. And congratulations to Yokohama F. Marinos for joining Kobe, Ulsan and Beijing in the quarters. Or commiserations to Yokohama and good luck to Suwon the rest of the way. Delete as applicable, listeners, as you are listening to this podcast on Tuesday or even later. You know the result of the final round of 16 game, but unfortunately we don't as we record. So the draw for the East Region quarterfinals will be made tomorrow, Tuesday the 8th. There was some confusion as to whether the bracket had already been set, but no, the four quarterfinalists will be drawn into the final bracket on Tuesday with the games are continuing until the semi-final, which is in the East region, which is on the 13th, right? Sunday the 13th, and then we will know who will play Persepolis of Iran in the ACL final. It's been quite a journey, but yeah, the AFC deserve credit for getting everything organised and getting everything played up to this point. All right then, so that is our look at the ACL for another week. Turning our attention to J1 then, and there was just one game played last midweek, Kashiwa winning 2-0 away at Sendai on Wednesday, thanks to goals from Cristiano and Michael Olunga, his 26th of the season, in a game from match day 26, postponed after Raysol's COVID-19 outbreak. And in the weekend's six match day 31 games, we'll start on Sunday down on the Shonan coast as a Belmare hosted second place Gamba Osaka, although they were third placed at kickoff after Nagoya had won on Saturday. And joining us to chat about Gamba's vital 2-1 away win is Johnny Nicol. Johnny, welcome back to the pod, and how are you?
I'm very good, Ben. Thanks for having me. I was actually thinking that the first time I was on the pod was back in June, and we were looking forward to the league restarting, and now I'm on to talk about the end of the season, and it doesn't seem like a lot of time has passed in between. But it's good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Not at all, mate. And this season, well, it's ultimately flown by, hasn't it? It's been very, very helter-skelter, but you'll be very pleased to see your team up in second with your destiny in your own hands with two games to play, especially after a little bit of a rocky patch after that pretty epic 12-game unbeaten run, which included 9 wins before you were kind of jolted back to reality by that stunning 4-0 home loss to Sendai, and then of course the big defeat, as it will always be known, to Kawasaki in the game that saw them clinch the title.
Yeah, Gamba's season's been kind of funny. We've won an awful lot of games 1-0 and 2-1, which I guess kind of means you're kind of like you're in a bit of danger if things go wrong, that they can go wrong spectacularly, obviously, as he did against Sendai, and then Kawasaki, it's almost difficult to compare them to other teams in J1. They're just so good. Like, with no disrespect to Torso, who we played last week, and then Shonan we'll talk about today. Like, those teams, even Gamba, are not really in that class. So it's very difficult to almost compare those games.
Most definitely. So, one of the recent problems that you've had, Johnny, is an ever-growing injury list at just the wrong point of the season. So, I said earlier, this is the win that you had to have, an absolutely vital win. So, I don't know, are you quite at the bare bones yet? Or, some real key names in your squad that have been missing at just the wrong time.
Yeah, I think I counted there was six players who would either have started or likely came on as a sub missing on Sunday. I think it was Usami and Kim, who I believe that they're just minor knocks and they should be back. Idiguchi and Onose, I think, are done for the season, but they're kind of keeping it a bit coy. Like, if Gamba did make it to the Emperor's Cup final, they might be able to play. And then obviously Yuji Ono is out for the season, and Adam Ilson, obviously, after his misdemeanors, out. And then Yuya Fukuda got suspended at the end of this game, so he's missing from the next one. So, yeah, guys, I think Sam mentioned last week about like Toyama, Kawasaki, Tsukamoto. These are guys I don't think Gamba ever really envisaged playing much in J1 this year, but due to like the kind of backlog of injuries they've been thrown in, and I tried to think of myself as a bit of an optimist. So, like, getting guys like them and like Okuno, getting them game time with people like Fukuda, Takao, Yamamoto all kind of stepping up, the future hopefully is going to be quite bright in Gamba with all these youth prospects coming through.
Indeed. And Sam, I guess, obviously we know that Gamba have had the under-23 team for a few seasons now. And it has borne fruit for them. It's been a success for them, no question. They've been able to bring a lot of players through. You know, earlier on in the season when we had Johnny on, we were asking him some of the names to watch out for. And some of them have gotten major opportunities this season. And on Sunday, it was a youngster in Yuya Fukuda scoring his first J1 goal. And what a screamer it was to get Gamba on the board in just the 6th minute.
Yeah, a lot of these young players that have played for the under-23s have kind of come into the team like ready-made. Fukuda, you mentioned. Takao, I think, has had a very good season. And Yamamoto in midfield has come in when there are injuries there. He's had to fill in. He's done an admirable job, considering this is his first season in J1. But yeah, Fukuda are probably the pick of the bunch, and this is a terrific goal. Patrick with a good hold-up play is what he does best. Lays it back to him, and Fukuda just rifles this in. I think keeper got a slight hand to it, but yeah, it was such power on the strike that there was no real chance of him keeping it out, and it was a good start for Gamba. And yeah, Fukuda is definitely one of these young players that has just really caught the eye this season and last season. He's so versatile, playing right side of midfield here. He's played left back. He's played all over midfield. You can just put him wherever you like. You plug him in and he'll do a job for you. And yeah, great sort of player to have in the team. And he set Gamba up really nicely here.
And so, Johnny, I don't know, you feel like a bit of a proud papa when you see Fukuda send in a rasper like that to get Gamba off to the perfect start?
Yeah, well, obviously, with my work schedule, I actually get to more like under-23 games than the first team recently. So seeing guys like him that I've seen play numerous times in J3, like, come through and do a good job, it does. He's a lot younger than me, so I guess I do feel a bit like a proud papa in a way. It was actually interesting. Fukuda said in his post-match interview that Usami had been coaching him on his shooting and training, and I think anyone who saw that goal, we could see a real stamp of Usami on that, that the kind of power and direction he got on it. I think that the kind of the angle it showed, it went straight over the goalkeeper, but he was kind of unsighted, and just the power, it was past him before he even knew it.
Yeah, it looked like he thought it was going to arc away from him or something, or he misjudged his jump. I'm not exactly sure. Obviously, I haven't spent a lot of time in goal in my life, so I don't really have too much experience of facing anything similar. But yeah, it won't be one that Masaki Goto will want to watch back, I wouldn't imagine. But just past the half hour, an incident that Gen Shoji would like to forget, I'm sure, Johnny. And interesting to get your thoughts on Shoji, not on this isolated incident, but you probably heard a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Sam, I think slightly disappointed. Sam, would that be the right the right words to use when you were discussing Shorji a couple of weeks ago? I think we probably thought he would have had a slightly better impact or had a more assured season. He's obviously had a lot of injury interruptions and was very slow to get going. And, giving away this penalty just past the half hour, I mean, it was just a reflex action to stick his arm out to deflect Hiroto Nakagawa's shot. So, I mean, this is not an indictment on his performance over the course of the season, of course, but must be said, an absolutely terrific penalty from Nakagawa, absolutely unsavable, gave Masaki Higashiguchi no chance. But, interesting to get your thoughts on Shoji, Johnny, because, obviously he's one of the bigger names in Japanese football, and coming back from France, I'm sure you had high expectations for him this season. Have they been lived up to, or maybe not quite as much?
I think definitely the not quite as much category, but obviously we have to kind of factor in the injuries he had both before he came and then after he joined. I think he took a while to get going, but then just before he got the second injury that kept him out recently, he was in really good form for about four or five games before that, I thought. But since he's come back in, I think he was quite poor, as everyone was in the 4-0 loss to Sendai. And then in this game, it's very interesting. Shonan have two very, very short forwards on, so he looked like a very commanding presence against them. Things seem to be going quite well. I can't really fault him for the penalty. Like you say, it was just a reflex action. I was more concerned about his kind of reaction to it. It seemed like in the kind of 10 minutes after that, before halftime, he was really desperate to atone for the error, and he was kind of diving into a couple of things, getting a bit heated. And I think at the start of the second half, it's all Miura and Shoji talking, as if Miura was kind of talking, well, just calm down, keep it calm. And he was much better in the second half. But Gamba are lucky. They've got like Kim and Miura and Shoji. And even Shunya Suganuma has done a good job when he's come in for a few games. We're definitely well-stocked in that department. It's just we could probably do with a few more fit kind of wide midfielders at the moment.
On Shoji, I just think, obviously, the injuries have played a part. I think Gamba started with a back three that they wanted to play, and then various things have happened where you've gone to a back four. You've had Kim's been out injured a couple of times. You've had Miura injured. It hasn't really been a settled back line for him to get into, and I think it's kind of flustered him a little bit. At his best at Kashima towards the end before he got his move, he was just imperious. Like, no one would get past him. You just think everything was in control if Shoji was there. And I think maybe a loss of confidence through the injuries, maybe not being quite settled, it's rattled him a little bit. So hopefully this season has just been like a learning phase for him, and then maybe get a little bit of a break and come back stronger next season, because there is a terrific centre-back in there. But I don't think we've seen him enough this season.
Well, yeah, it obviously has all the hallmarks of one of the top centre back pairings in the league, no question. I mean, Shoji and Kim Yong-kwon next to each other, obviously with Genta Miura as well, the club captain, who will definitely want his games. So, when fit and healthy, Gamba definitely have one of the best centre back stocks in J1. That is for definite. So, Johnny. So the equaliser from Shonan came 10 minutes before the break, then, and we'll come on to the big man netting the winner 20 minutes into the second half. But, how were you feeling after the equaliser went in? And then as the game progressed, Gamba, obviously needing to win after Nagoya had gone above them on Saturday, of course. So were there any nervy moments, or did you feel you're in enough control of the game that, there would be a chance or two to come, and you were just hoping that one of them would go in?
I wasn't really nervous about losing the game, because actually Gamba this year, one of the ways they've made a lot of progress is no one's come from behind to beat them. And with the greatest of respect to Shonan, they don't score many goals. And I wasn't too worried about losing as such, but drawing would obviously, after the Kawasaki game and the draw with Tosu, if we'd drawn this game again, then the confidence would have been pretty low, and it would have been difficult to see them sort of rising above like Nagoya and Cerezo. But the goal they scored, obviously, was really good teamwork. And I think it was the kind of quality that Gamba do have, even without, like, those players like Usami, Idiguchi there, like Yajima, Watanabe, Fujiharu. They're all good seasoned players, and they all like, played their part in setting up what was a great goal by Patrick. I was, like, really happy for him to get his goal, and his goal and an assist in his 200th game. He had a bit of a slow start to his second spell, but he's really been one of the kind of form players in the last 10, 15 games.
What do you think it is about Patrick that's helped him to kind of revitalise himself? Because, as you said, he was quite slow to his second spell. He'd already been chipped off from Gamba once, and it kind of looked like at one stage his career was kind of petering out, but especially these last 2 months, and once Adam Milson dropped out, he's really stepped up, and yeah, he's just a real talisman for Gamba. So yeah, what would you put that down to, do you think?
I think you may actually have kind of hit the nail on the head with mentioning the Adam Milson incident. That's the kind of, like, when he came in last year, he was kind of in for a couple of games and on the bench, and then I think Usami and Adam Milson formed a good partnership, and he was kind of on the bench at the end of the season. Then obviously this year there was kind of chopping and changing between the strikers from game to game. But obviously with Adam Milson being out and Usami didn't play this game, I have a sneaking suspicion he's been kind of nursing an injury for a bit. So Patrick's been the sort of the go-to man up front. He's had the confidence, he's got the manager's confidence, he is the first choice in attack. So just getting games week in, week out, he's been able to build up his confidence and his rhythm. And I think that's 5 goals in his last 10 games, if I counted right. So, yeah, he's a favourite, the Gamba support. And, yeah, he's really been a massive player for us in the last 2 games.
Yeah, most definitely. We know the big man has a flair for the dramatic. And, yeah, in his 200th J1 game, he rose and powered home a header from Hiroki Fujiharu's inch-perfect cross from the left in the 66th minute. And that has ultimately ended up the winner. But, well, Gamba are indebted not for the first time, not for the 10th time, not for the 100th time this season to Masaaki Higashiguchi, who basically, well, saved them 2 points with a stunning point-blank save from Takuya Okamoto's volley in the 90th minute. Johnny, your heart must have been in your mouth when you saw the ball sailing over the top of the ruck of people in the centre and Okamoto lining up his volley.
Yeah, I think people who follow me on Twitter will probably know I'm not really one for hot takes during the game. And what was actually going through my mind before that was Gamba seeing this out quite comfortably, like Shonan haven't threatened in the last 15 minutes. And then I think I was talking to a few people actually after the game about Taiga Hata down the left for Shonan. The first time I'd seen him, he had a really good game. And that cross he put across the goal was just, it deserved a goal, like basically, I think neutrals or Shonan fans would say. But like you say, Higashiguchi, I think you said like a few years ago, Shoji was like nothing would get by him, whereas Higashiguchi in some games this year, it's like, yeah, that ball's never gone by him. That was really the kind of difference. It could have been 2-2 easily. Okamoto should have scored. You feel it should have been 2-2, but yeah, I don't really have words to describe how good Higashiguchi's been this season. Time and time again, he's saved the points for Gamba, and we've got away with like 1-0 and 2-1 wins.
Yeah, I mean, Sam said, yeah, it was about a month ago, I think, that, yeah, he's probably the first choice for the J1 team of the season. And, yeah, well, he certainly hasn't done his cause any harm at all on Sunday at the BMW Stadium. So let's just reset things in the race for second, basically. As we know, Kawasaki have already clinched the title in record-setting fashion. So we've already told you that Nagoya won on Saturday, and spoiler alert, so did Cerezo Osaka. So, yeah, we'll set the table for you, listeners, with Gamba and Nagoya both having 2 games left and Cerezo 3. So Gamba have 62 points and a goal difference of plus 4, Grampus 59 and a goal difference of plus 16. Cerezo are a point behind Nagoya with a game in hand on the 2 teams above them. And, well, their goal difference is pretty much in the middle between Grampus and Gamba. Theirs is plus 10. So, Johnny, you have a match day 33 away fixture against the Yokohama FC to play before you host a suddenly frisky Shimizu on the final day of the season. So I guess, yeah, having this weekend off, this coming weekend off, will be, a decent break for the players, as both Nagoya and Cerezo have to play on Saturday. So, yeah, the little bit of extra time to get a bit more rest in the players' legs before, obviously, 2 more must-win games.
Yeah, I think, like I said earlier, I think Usami and Kim, the rumour is that definitely Usami should be able to play the next game. I guess the kind of problem Gamba and all teams by that kind of matter have is, like, usually if your first choice player is injured, you can just play the second choice player week in, week out. Whereas now, like, we still have to play Yokohama away on the Wednesday night and Shimizu home on the Saturday. So someone like Kazuma Watanabe, he's not going to be able to start both of those games. Obviously, Fukuda's out suspended on the Wednesday, which doesn't really help us, but they're still going to have to kind of move players around a bit. But I'm not complaining from a personal aspect. Writing the blog, having 10 days off to do the next blog post is good for me. I'm sure, like, with Gamba's injuries, there'll be no complaints around the Gamba training ground about having such a long break at this time of the season.
All right, and Sam, so Nagoya have their break is in the final midweek, isn't it? Because they play match day 32 on the 12th, also against Yokohama FC, funnily enough, but at home. While most teams play match day 33 in midweek, Grampus are off before they host Hiroshima on the final day. So two home games to finish with Nagoya, you'd expect them to win both, but as we know from past experience, they've burned us a number of times. Just when you think they're hitting their straps, they'll throw in a dog of a performance. So, we can't really say anything with too much certainty when it comes to Grampus, but on paper, although Hiroshima have been getting some reasonable results themselves at the end of the season, I guess you'd expect Grampus to do the business and just hope for a slip up from Gumba above them.
Yeah, there are no gimmies in this league, but if you wanted to end in any way, it'd be two home games a week apart. I think, no one would complain about that at Nagoya. I think they are difficult fixtures. Yokohama FC are a team that they've not had anything to play for necessarily all season, but they've always given a game to their opponents. They're not going to roll over for anyone. So it's a difficult game for both Gamba and Nagoya when they play them. Hiroshima are a little bit, then it depends which team they bother to throw up. They have been going with like their strongest team for one game, they're completely reserves for the next, so yeah, who knows what team will turn up against Nagoya in that one. But yeah, they fully expect to get the 6 points and be very disappointed if they didn't.
Indeed. And so, yes, Cerezo have three games left. This Saturday they play match day 32 home against Kashiwa Reysol. In midweek on the 16th, they play match day 33, also at home against Tosu, before they finish away at Kashima. And that's a very important game because the Antlers have 55 points, so they're out of the running for second. And, almost certainly is something you can't really ever say in J1, but it's unlikely that they could finish third, barring a total implosions from both Nagoya and Cerezo. But they're still in with a mathematical shot. But I guess at this stage, Johnny, you just hope that Kashima take care of Cerezo on the final day, because that's one one less thing that Gamba will have to worry about.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be strange get Gamba supporters becoming Kashima supporters for the day. But that like, compared to what Gamba and Nagoya have in front of them, that Cerezo, especially playing three games in a week, two of them against pretty decent teams like Kashiwa and Kashima, and then Tosu are hard to play against. They don't concede many goals. Obviously, from a Gamba perspective, I'm probably a bit biased, but I really struggle to see them taking 9 points from those three games, and with the Lotina situation kind of hanging over them as well, players be linked with moves to Nagoya. I could see them taking 6 points. I couldn't see them taking nine. How about you?
Yeah, you wouldn't have. Yeah, I would say that seven is more likely, and they'll probably be happy with seven, to be honest. Yeah, I don't really think they're legitimate shots for second at this stage. I think, it's going to be fought out by yourselves and Gamba and Nagoya, sorry. And obviously, if you hold serve, then it'll all be moot anyway. But, I'd write, pencil them in for 6 or 7 points, but I think nine is a little bit too much to ask. So, Johnny, we did confirm in the green room, all three of us have crunched the numbers, and we have confirmed that it's impossible for Gumba to finish lower than fourth, but obviously, second is the target, and it's well within reach with two games left. So, you're very happy about that situation, obviously, and hopefully, as you say, the injury situation will clear with a little bit of a break before your next game. So before we let you go, we did want to get your thoughts on what is probably a very easy question to answer, but we were hoping you could give us a short list of three names rather than just one. I think the one is fairly obvious, but if you could give us a short list of three names to consider when Sam and I put our heads together and decide who Gumba's player of the season is. They will be coming up in two podcasts' time, as we assume they're going to finish in the top three. So, yeah, if you could, three names that have stood out for you over the course of the season and are worthy winners of the Gumba Osaka Player of the Season Award.
Okay, so I've had a little think about this. I'll do it kind of in reverse order, so maybe the obvious choice you alluded to will come last. The first one I'll go with will be Patrick. If he had played the whole season like he's done the last sort of 10, 15 games, he would definitely be a strong contender to, I think, be the player of the season. But, yes, he sort of held the forward line together with Adam Ilson being out and Usami having a few problems, so he definitely merits a mention. Maybe a step above that, I would say Yosuke Idiguchi, who, almost like Patrick, like they both came back to Gamba at a similar time last season, weren't at their best last season, but slowly but surely got better this year. And so the kind of 10 games before Idiguchi got injured, he was dynamic, he was brilliant, and he's almost Gamba's hardest player to replace because we don't have anyone like him, and we're stuck now with like Yajima, Yamamoto, or more kind of playmaker types. We really need his ball-winning abilities to come back as soon as possible. And then last but definitely not least, someone we mentioned earlier, Masaki Higashiguchi. That save against Shonan from Okamoto, that tells you everything that you need to know about him this season. I think he had one slightly ropey 45 minutes against Sapporo at home, but other than that, I've watched all the games and he has been outstanding every single game he's played other than that. So, yeah, without doubt, that's my recommendation. You guys are obviously free, it's your podcast to choose who you want, but I would strongly suggest Masaki Higashiguchi for Gamba's Player of the Year this year.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get too much argument from either of us, Johnny. I think that's the nailed-on choice. But, yeah, we still have to go through the process, of course, of debating it out once we get around to chatting about Gumba. But, yes, your names are well and truly taken under consideration. Thank you very much for that, mate. And, yeah, thanks for popping back on the podcast. I'm not sure if you're a believer in the jinx or not, so I won't ask you to predict whether or not you think Gumba will finish second or not. Personally, I would never want to do that out loud in public because that would be the end of any chance FC Tokyo had of doing anything. So, yeah, I won't put you in that awkward position. But all we can do is wish Gumba the best of luck for their final two games. As we said, away against Yokohama FC in match day 33 and then on the final day at home against Shimizu. Johnny, thanks for joining us again. And, if it all goes well, we might chat again after the end of the season, if that's okay.
Thanks again for having me, Ben. I think it's my third or fourth time on. It's always been very enjoyable. So, yeah, hopefully, potentially, Gamba Emperor's Cup qualification, ACL qualification, we might have a chance to talk about that. Fingers crossed.
All right, brilliant stuff. Thanks again to Johnny Nicol for joining us. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will round up the other games from J1 Match Day 31. Welcome back, and we already gave it away in part one, of course, but yes, both Nagoya and Cerezo Osaka won their games in Match Day 31 on Saturday, both away from home. We'll begin at Hitachi Dai, where it finished Kashiwa 0, Nagoya 1. A first half was notable for long-range efforts from Cristiano and Michael Olunga for the hosts, and Mateus and Gabriel Xavier for the visitors. However, it was Yuki Soma who pounced on a handling error from Raysol keeper Kim Sung-gyu in the 51st minute and scored the winner from 3 yards out. Kim dropped a cross sent in from the right by Sho Inagaki to leave Soma the simple task of tapping in. In the 82nd minute, Tatsuya Yamashita headed in a Yuta Kamiya free kick for the hosts, but had strayed just offside as the set piece was taken. A good decision from the linesman. So, Sam, there was a bit of rain around on Saturday, but still, that's not really any excuse for that lapse in concentration from Kim in the Raysol goal, is it?
No, it was very weird, actually. It's quite a tame cross that comes in. I don't know if it gets a bit of spin on it or something, but as he's going to making the action to claim the cross, he looks like he does it too early, and the ball then hits his left arm and just bounces so kindly for Soma. It's he's made a couple of mistakes, actually, in recent games. I wonder if the lack of competition that there is at Kashua, given Kosuke Nakamura has been out all season, I don't know if he's just got a bit comfortable, Kim, and he's just losing concentration, and this was really poor. I mean, it was almost either this or a spectacular goal was the only way that there was going to be a goal in this game, because despite the attacking quality on both teams, neither of them got too close to the opposition's goal. That, as you mentioned, a lot of long-range efforts, but generally, at least shot-stopping-wise, these are two goalkeepers that aren't going to be beaten by those, and they had to be, they would have had to have been terrific strikes, and they weren't in this game. Nagoya will take it, because it looked like, for a long period, this is another game like the game the week before, where they might plug away for a bit, but not really look like scoring. So, yeah, they'll be delighted with the 3 points, and they might need to send the Christmas hamper or something to Kim for his assists.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I'm not sure. Kim might have been slightly distracted by Kengo Kitazume running across him. But, I mean, it's just a terrible lapse in concentration. And, Yuki Soma, the very grateful recipient. Okay, well, there were more goals on display up in Sapporo, where hosts Consadole entertained Cerezo Osaka. It finished at 3-1. To the visitors, Bruno Mendes opened the scoring with a lovely header from Riku Matsuda's cross 5 minutes before half-time, and then he sealed the win with his second of the game 10 minutes from time to make it 3-1. In between, Hiroshi Kiyotake had extended Cerezo's lead to 2-0 with a terrific swiveled volley 9 minutes into the second half before Jay Bothroyd pulled a goal back for Consadole in the 65th minute, heading in a Lucas Fernandez cross. So this has ended up being relatively comfortable by the looks of the highlights anyway, Sam. But some pretty decent goals on display here up at the Sapporo Dome.
Yeah, I think ever since we just kind of said, oh, maybe Cerezo were dropping off a bit, they've really turned it on, and they played well in this game. I think Sapporo started the better, but eventually Cerezo did kind of build their way into the game. I just think Bruno Mendes up front makes a lot of difference. They had that really poor patch when Toyokawa was the main striker, but yeah, Mendes gives an option for Kiyotaki and Sakamoto to aim for. He's very dangerous with his head in the box. He had forced a couple of decent saves before he scored the first goal. And yeah, he took his goals very well, especially the first, a very nice header. The best of them was Kiyotake's goal. I thought the technique on that is terrific. But I thought generally a good game, actually. I thought Sapporo were a little better than the highlights would suggest. They had their chances, as they usually do, with sometimes it just doesn't quite pay off for them in the final third. I thought Bothroyd took his goal well, but in the end, Cerezo did just about enough to win this game. And they're getting back into some decent form. They've got, as we mentioned earlier, they've got a difficult run of the three games coming up, but they're in form. They play Kashua, who are now out of contention after their loss. Then, Kashima might be out of contention by the time they play them on the final day, so it might work out quite nicely for them, but yeah, it still is a tough run of fixtures for them.
Most definitely. All right, so we said it towards the end of part one with Johnny that Shimizu are suddenly frisky after their change of manager, and so it proved again on Saturday when they welcomed the champions Kawasaki Frontale to Nihon Daira. Shimizu twice taking the lead before ultimately being pegged back on both occasions, and finally, the second time, by the right-back Miki Yamane in the 89th minute. Goodness knows what he was doing as the furthest Frontale player forward, Sam, that late in the game, but I guess that's just an indication of the total football that Frontale play and have done throughout this season. But it looked a hugely entertaining game for the punters at Nihon Daira. Carlinhos fired home after Ryo Takeuchi had flicked on Kenta Nishizawa's cross from the right in the 11th minute, but 10 minutes later the champions were level after Ao Tanaka drifted in from the left and played 1-2s with both Hidemasa Morita and Leandro Damião before rifling home at Takuo Okubo's near post. In the 29th minute, Okubo did superbly to tip Tanaka's low drive onto the post, and then 5 minutes before half-time, Espolz went back in front after Renato Augusto's low shot hit a scrambling Miki Yamane and trickled over the line before the Kawasaki defender could hook the ball away. So a breathless first half by the looks of the highlights, Sam, and Espolz going in, again, from the highlights, so you've watched the whole thing, they looked like they just about deserved it, 2-1 up at the break.
Yeah, this was a magnificent game, in the first half especially. I think it was just two teams just going for it, no thought of defending, especially from Kawasaki. I mean, best defence in the league, but it looked like Jesse L and Taniguchi had been on one the night before because they didn't turn up. They were just gifting the ball away. It was a bit comic at times where there were moments where they'd just get into situations where they'd knock the ball back towards their own goal line and have to try and hook it off. I think there were two or three occasions where they had to make clearances just to rescue their own errors. Shimizu, though, played very well, to give them credit. They passed the ball around nicely. They pressed high. They took their chances when they came. I think the goal from Carlinhos was a very nice finish. Same for Renato Augusto when he made himself a little bit of space in the area. So yeah, at 2-1 I thought it was very much a fair result for Shimizu. Kawasaki, when they went forward, did go forward very well. I think the goal that they scored, as you mentioned, the 1-2s that Tanaka was playing, it was beautiful football. So at least the attackers and the midfielders were still on it. But yeah, it made for a really good game. And the second half, although there was only the one goal, it was still end-to-end stuff and still a really great, really good game for the neutral.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. So this game marked the first time that Kawasaki had trailed in a league game for 3 months. The last time was all the way back in match day 15 when they had trailed Kobe 2-1 before ultimately winning 3-2. But they had to settle for a point after Yamane's goal in the 89th minute. Earlier, it looked like Yu Kobayashi was certain to make it to 2-2 just inside the last 10 minutes when Yamane crossed from the right. Kobayashi slid in to turn the ball home, but he only succeeded in deflecting it up and onto the bar. So after Yamane's equaliser in the 89th minute, El Seno denied his former side a winner when he hacked a Manabu Saito shot away from a yard out. The son of Saito mishitting his shot. Otherwise, El Seno would have had no chance, but the Espolz defender scrambling back to hook away. So, Sam, before we move on, we mentioned it with Johnny, and he might want to hear it, but the Espolz are suddenly playing with, it looks like, with the handbrake off, and they have to play Gumba on the final day, and before that, they have to play Kashima in match day 32, a game that Antlers have to win if they have any chance of finishing in the top three. So there's a fair chance that Espolz could be playing spoiler here over the remaining games for some contenders who have some a lot on the line towards the end of the season.
Yeah, they'll be absolutely very difficult games. I mean, the only one that they kind of dropped one was the Sapporo game where they lost 5-1 at the Sapporo Dome. But other than that, they've been right on it. They, I think maybe it's just in trying to impress the new manager, make sure their spot's there for next season. They have gone back to the formation that I think suits them the best, and it's kind of getting the best out of the players. Carlinhos is justifying his award from us from a couple of weeks ago. And I think, yeah, it'd be a really difficult game for both those sides to face Shimizu. They're not going to sit back, so they will give chances away, but they are just going to keep coming at you, so you have to be on your game for the 90 minutes, because as we know, Shimizu they weren't this weekend, it went against them, but they play until the final whistle. They will get late goals as well, so not easy games for Shimizu, and they'll make things very interesting, I think, in a similar way that Yokohama will. So those two teams could very easily play spoiler this season.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, two games to go then. The other game on Sunday was down in Oita, but a disappointing result for host Trinita as they were beaten 2-0 on their own patch by Vegalta Sendai. No, listeners, Shun Nagasawa did not add to his record goals tally. Instead, Takeyoshi Ishihara scored after 17 seconds. Not quite the J-League record, I don't think, for the fastest ever goal, but it'd definitely be right up there. His deflected shot crept just over the line. And then Hiroto Yamada's superb header from Kunimitsu Sekiguchi's corner in the 74th minute made it 2-0. But, Sam, well, we've spoken a couple of times in recent weeks about the inconsistency in the new handball law, but how Oita did not get a penalty kick in the 85th minute is, absolutely beyond me. I mean, we saw in the Gumba game, again, Shoji was rightly penalised and a penalty was given to Shonan when he blocked Hiroto Nakagawa's shot. So what on earth was the referee doing when he appeared to have a perfect view of Simao Mate blocking a Kohei Issa's shot?
Don't ask me. I have no idea what this interpretation of the handball rule is. That's a handball every day of the week. I don't know why the referee hasn't given it. I can't fudge a rule and an interpretation of the rule that suggests otherwise. So, yeah, I think that just has to go down as a poor refereeing decision.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if Judge Replay will even bother with that, because, I mean, it's just plainly wrong. I mean, there's not really much point in sitting around and discussing it and watching 17 replays when you can see that the referee has properly cocked up there. So, ultimately, I suppose it wasn't Oita's day, and then they well and truly found out it wasn't in the 85th minute. And it's going to make discussing their player of the season in about 5 minutes a little bit tricky, isn't it, Sam? Because you don't really want to give it to anyone after a performance like that, but... Yes, we obviously have to judge the season as a whole. So in the final game, well, this looked like a real rollicking affair at Mitsuzawa, Sam. The shots were raining in from everywhere when the Yokohama FC hosted Tosu. It finally ended at 1-1, which I guess looked, a draw just about looked a fair result, but a 4-4 might have been a little bit better. But anyway, Takuya Matsura side-footed home after brilliant work down the left from Koki Saito in the first minute of first half stoppage time to give the Yokohama FC the lead. And the same pair combined 9 minutes into the second half, a Matsuura's bundled shot coming back off the post with Kazunari Ichimi's fierce follow-up somehow blocked on the line with his head by Daiki Matsuoka. It's one of the it's courageous. I mean, Matsuoka obviously didn't know anything about it. And Ichimi, well, his luck certainly wasn't in on this day, was it, Sam? Because he had quite a few efforts on goal, and he would have thought he was fairly certain to score when he blasted on net from about a yard out. But, Matsuoka's big noggin got in the way. And then for Tosu, the substitute Renzo Lopez rose above his marker to head home Riki Harakawa's cross from the left in the 86th minute. But, Tosu then nearly won it. They had the two terrific chances late on with Yuji Rokutan making a stunning save to bat Eduardo's point-blank header onto the bar. And then even later in stoppage time, Fuchi Honda's header was saved down low by Rokutan. So, yeah, this looked like a cracking end-of-season game between two teams with nothing to play for, but, as I say, basically just with the handbrake off.
Yeah, this is the template for every other team that's playing a dead rubber for in the last couple of weeks. This is what you have to do. This was a fantastic game. Both teams just going for it. The two goalkeepers, as you mentioned Rokutan there, but that save from Eduardo was magnificent. But Park was making saves as well, denying the unluckiest man in the world, Ichimi, in the first half a couple of times. That block from Matsuoka, you know nothing about it, but full credit to him for being able to play on. I think I'd have called it a day after that blow to the head. So... Yeah, terrific. There was, madness all over the place. I draw definitely a fair result. Yeah, and you'd say 4-4 would have been perfect. But, no one deserved to lose this game. And, terrific game of football, which when you saw Yokohama versus Sagan Tosu on paper, I don't think anyone would have expected as good a game as this was.
Well, let's hope that, as neutrals, let's hope that Yokohama FC can turn on the style, against Nagoya on Saturday, and then Gumba the following Wednesday, and give them proper games to test their mettle as they look to try and finish second in the table. All right, so just the six games from the weekend then, as we said. Two were played much earlier on in the season, those involving Yokohama, F. Marinos and Kobe, but there is still one game left to play from match day 31, and that involves the FC Tokyo, and for their clash with Hiroshima on Saturday. Basically, it'll be Arthur Silva and the FC Tokyo youth team that will front up at Ajinomoto Stadium. So goodness knows how that result will end up. And if Hiroshima send their first team and take it seriously, well, yeah, that scoreline could be anything, quite frankly. But, yeah, we'll come on to the other games from the weekend shortly. But drum roll, please. Coming up next, we have our next four clubs in the Players of the Season series. Today we'll be discussing Oita again after their dud of a game at home against Sendai. Urawa after, cover your ears, Reds fans, a dud of a season. Yokohama F. Marinos and Kashiwa Reysol. So let's start with Oita, Sam. As we know, they don't have too many star names, and most definitely they are greater than the sum of their parts. But our three names that we have up for discussion are Tomoki Iwata, who I think we discussed last week, probably had a better 2019 than 2020, but still have been an effective defender for Oita. Yushi Hasegawa and Tatsuya Tanaka. So Iwata's made 27 appearances this season, Hasegawa 24, and Tanaka is the top scorer with 8 goals in his 29 appearances. So, again, you have to watch them every week, so I'm more than happy for you to have the casting vote. Who is Oita's J-Talk player of the season?
Well, thank you for giving me the most difficult decision that we have, I think. I just want to say before I get onto them, I think if Naoki Nomura had played more games this season, I think he'd be almost a shoo-in for this. I think he's had a lot of injuries, but since he's come back, he's been magnificent. He has a little bit of a touch of class that maybe Oita are missing. So hopefully he gets fit next season, and has a very good 2021. Yeah, but back to these three names. Yeah, Iwata, I thought, fantastic last season. If we were doing these awards last season, I think, he'd have absolutely got it. But although he's been steady, I thought the start of the season, the defence wasn't quite there. So, I think I'll leave Iwata for this one. Tanaka is the one is the top scorer, but he's a little bit in and out of the team. But he is the one he's got quality in him. He's got a good finish on him. He's very versatile. He didn't get the chance really at Gamba, so he stepped down to Oita, and he's a very good player. And then holding midfielder Hasegawa, he's only 24. He's really come on this season. He's made that position his own. He's very solid in there. He does the dirty work as a holding midfielder has to do. You're not going to get the plaudits that you usually, most other players would. So I almost want to give it to him. I think his work generally goes unnoticed, and I just don't think there's a standout in this team. So I'm going to say that the workhorse of the team should get the award, and I'm going to give it to Yushi Hasegawa, and I don't know if he'd have expected that.
Rightio, no, fair enough then. A lot of players in central midfield, their work goes unnoticed, so it's great that we can reward one of them with a Player of the Season award. So well done, Yushi Hasegawa. One for your mantelpiece, buddy. That's terrific. All right, now, it's a difficult decision for Oita because their squad is quite balanced. I think it's a difficult decision for Urawa, Sam, because basically hardly anyone has played well consistently this season. We did struggle last week after recording last week's podcast. We put our heads together and tried to come up with a shortlist for the four clubs we were going to discuss this week, and basically we wrote down one name, and that was Shusaku Nishikawa, their goalkeeper. So in the week, I contacted our Urawa correspondent, Ryan Steele, for his thoughts. He agreed with us that it's a very difficult decision, but he suggested we also nominate what Ryan hoped at the start of the season was going to be Urawa's dream strike pairing of Leonardo and Shinzo Kuroki. And they have both, at times, impressed hugely. Leonardo has 11 goals, which is a decent return in his first season with Reds. Shinzo Kuroki, maybe not to his usual high standards, with 9 goals this season. So if they are our three-man shortlist, and Ryan kind of threw them in because he thought he had to give us two names, I think. I think it's going to be going to Shusaku Nishikawa, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is a pretty comfortable decision. I think it should be Leonardo if Otsuki had decided to play him for most of the season. Mm. I don't know why you continue to leave his first-choice goal scorer on the bench or sometimes out of the squad. So maybe under another manager, and thankfully for me at least, that Oski's leaving at the end of this season, and maybe Leonardo can be freed up. But yeah, it did look like a good partnership, him and Kuroki, and they started the season, that game against Shonan, they did work very well together, so yeah, Reds fans would have been delighted by that, but it just hasn't quite worked out. Kuroki's had a decent season, but he'd have expected to have a better one, and usually would have a better one. And I think Nishikawa is the one who's had to bail out his team time and time again. The defence in front of him is dreadful, and he just makes stupid mistakes. And Nishikawa has eliminated the mistakes that have mired his game occasionally. And I think he's produced some fantastic saves that have... Like, Urara have got results when they really shouldn't have this season. A lot of it is down to Nishikawa. So unless you have any objections, I think Nishikawa will be our player of the season.
Yeah, no, I think it has to be him. Yeah, as you say, I would have loved to have seen Leonardo unleashed because, he looks like he's an absolutely lethal forward. But I guess along similar lines to Carlinhos at Shimizu, we haven't quite seen him at his best this season. But hopefully, next season with a... a proper preseason and a coach, hopefully a new coach that will make the most of his abilities. Then he could be absolutely anything for Reds next season. So something Urawa supporters to hang their hats on for 2021, because obviously their 2020 has been hugely frustrating. And you have to throw the defending champions Yokohama F. Marinos into the same boat. We wondered what they would do for an encore, and in a season obviously admittedly very helter-skelter with all their games brought forward due to the ACL. At the end of the day, they've had a pretty dreadful campaign as the defending champions. They're currently sitting in ninth, and even Reds behind them have two games in hand, so there's a possibility that they could slip into the bottom half of the table, and not too many defending J1 champions have done that the following season after reclaiming glory, I don't think. But we have on our shortlist, Sam, we have three of their lethal strike force, and they're all Brazilians. They're currently their joint top scorers, Eric and Junior Santos, both have 13 league goals this season. Eric in 29 appearances, 20 starts, and Junior Santos 13 in just 22 appearances and 17 starts. The third name on our list is mesmerizing Marcos Junior. 11 goals for him this season in 28 appearances. 24 of those have been starts. In terms of bursting onto the scene, Sam, Eric certainly did that last season at the tail end of things when he scored 8 goals in 12 games after coming in late on in the season. Junior Santos has had obviously more than half a season with F. Marinos, but he's made a similar kind of impact. 3 braces and a hat-trick in amongst his 13 goals. They all have their merits, obviously. If I was going to pick one to start my own team with, I would probably go with Eric. But my vote for F. Marinos Player of the Season has probably got to go to Junior Santos, just for the unexpected impact, I suppose, he'd made after his time with Kashiwa. We didn't think he was going to be up to anything at all, but the F. Marinos brass have seen something in him, and they've unleashed it, and he's definitely hit the ground running for them.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. We came from Kashiwa, where he'd barely kicked a ball, so it looked a weird signing on paper, but they'd obviously done their homework, and he has kind of transformed their strike force. He does everything. He can hold the ball up if need be. He's very good in the air, but terrific on the ground as well. Some of the goals he scored this season have been fantastic, and he has on occasion looked unplayable. And I just think maybe if you just looked at this season in isolation, you might be more high on Marcos Junior or Eric. But I just think looking at the standard they set last year, both are a little bit down the level, I think. As good of players as they are, they're both terrific players. But yeah, I'd be with you on Junior Santos. I think the impact he has made has been greater than the other two. And yeah, as you said, for a surprise factor, if nothing else. So yeah, very happy to go with Junior Santos.
All right, great stuff from the big man, and he's certainly made a massive impact. Unfortunately, of course, not over with F. Marinos for the ACL, but Yeah, he'll be hopefully with the club again in 2021, and we'll want to kick on. All right, well, the last club we've got to do on this week's episode is Kashua Reysol. So, Sam, and you'll want to agree with me, I'm sure, we want to give Ataru Esaka an honourable mention here. Are there any other players you'd like to give a mention to before we go through our three nominees?
Yes. As you said, has been terrific in behind the strikers. He's just, yeah, a little bit of class, a little bit of cleverness. He's just, his movement is really good. He'll help out defensively. So, yeah, Esaka has been fantastic. The other one I'd probably mention is Tayo Koga at the back. I mean, given the rest of the defence has fallen apart through injuries this season, he's managed to be a constant there. He's switched positions a little bit. He's only 22 as well. So for him to be able to lead a defence the way he has done, I think it's full credit to him. So, yeah, those would be my two honourable mentions.
Fair enough. Yeah, Esaka at 9 goals and, a terrific... a terrific part of this Reysol team. But the first of our three nominations is Michael Olunga's right foot, Sam. 5 goals this season, and the most recent, of course, in that win away at Sendai last midweek. So Olunga's right foot has been terrific throughout the campaign for Reysol, no question.
Yeah, not always confident in front of goal. It's not quite got the ability that maybe other players have. But, yeah, it definitely made a late push in midweek. So, yeah, it has to be up there. It's been crucial to the left foot's involvement, I think. And, yes, so, yeah, really good season from Olunga's right foot.
Indeed, indeed. Olunga's head with 6 goals has also been hugely important. Obviously, the big man is, you'd expect him to get his fair share of headers. And, Olunga's head is no different.
Yeah, there was that wonderful stooping diving header a couple of games ago. And, yeah, he's just powerful. He just beats defenders in the air quite easily. And, yeah, he got a little bit of guile to it. So, yeah, he just is a terrific header of the ball. And, yeah, very good 6 goals, I think. But that diving header, I think, is my favourite.
Yep, an absolute belter, no question. And our third nominee from Kashua Reysol is Michael Olunga's left foot. Absolutely prodigious season for Olunga's left foot. 15 goals, and just his left foot alone is tied for second in the Golden Boot race behind Everaldo. Everaldo has 17 goals. His entire body combined. Olunga's left foot has 15 goals, level with Leandro Pereira, also on 15. So, there was never really going to be any debate, was there, Sam? The header and right foot have obviously done extremely well this season, but left foot, Olunga's left foot was always going to be Reysol's Player of the Year.
Yeah, well out in front, his left foot. He's had a fantastic season. Just started the season so well with those counter-attacking goals and the finishes against Sapporo, and then just pretty much scored almost every game. It's just, there was, my favourite left foot goal is, I think it was against Yokohama FC. Ball comes over the top over his right shoulder. He takes it down with left foot past the defender and then finishes it fantastically. I mean, yeah, an individual genius is left foot and fully deserving of a Player of the Year.
Yeah, absolutely, no questions asked. Michael Olunga, 26 goals this year, and he's not finished yet, obviously, so what else can you say? We've had a bit of fun there, listeners, but, it's just been a phenomenal season from the big man, and, there's not really, it wasn't really any point mentioning anybody else, but we did want to mention Esaka and Koga as well, but, Olunga, an absolutely, a season to remember, absolutely no question at all, and, who knows, that left foot might add to his tally this Wednesday when Reysol host Oita in a game that has to be made up from match day 27. Then, of course, we have 7 games on Saturday. I've already mentioned one of them from match day 31 when the FC Tokyo youth team will face Hiroshima. Gumba, of course, have the weekend off, so Nagoya will move back up to second if they beat Yokohama FC at home. And Cerezo Osaka have the chance to close to within a point of Gumba if they beat Kashiwa at home, when Olunga's left foot will obviously be on the prowl again. Kashima will be hoping for for slip-ups from those two, and they will go fourth if Cerezo lose and they beat Shimizu at home, while elsewhere the champions head down to Tosu, Oita host Sapporo, and Urawa entertain Shonan. All right, Sam, well, we've just about done it. We've got you out the door with just 10 minutes to go before Yokohama F. Marino's kick-off in their ACL Round of 16 game against Suwon. So thanks for everything on this episode. We hope you enjoy that game. We hope it's a positive result for F. Marino's. And, we'll speak to you again next week.
Yeah, thank you for the impeccably timed podcast. We're ready. We're 10 minutes before kickoff. It should be a really good game. Yokohama have gone full strength, so I'm very hopeful that we'll have a positive result for Yokohama, and they should be joining, hopefully, Kobe in the quarterfinals.
All right, we certainly hope so. And, listeners, you'll know the answer to that by the time you listen to this podcast, of course. All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Johnny Nickel for his time on this week's episode, our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon, and, of course, you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the week in ACL and J1. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh, 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 yosh.